Jim Furno, the city manager, joins us the first Wednesday of the month. City council typically is on the second Wednesday. And Jim and I were just talking about the fact that the river is something, you know, it's sort of like the weather in general. You know, you can talk all you want about it, but you can't predict what it's going to do. And weather certainly has a huge impact on that. We go through stretches of time, Jim, where it's dry, and you can't buy a rain. And then you go through times where it seems like all it will do is rain. And the HESCO barriers, I'm going to guess your guys are going to be real tired about taking them, putting them up, taking them down, putting them up, taking them down. And
I think they were tired 4 years ago with that, maybe longer.
You've been doing it every year pretty much at least once a year, haven't you?
They've done it. I don't know how many times they've put up or torn down. They've worked on HESCOs in 8 years that I've been here, I think six of the years now. And some of those they're putting them up or tearing them down three times in a given year, and it gets wearing on them. They don't get any other work done.
What is the lifespan of a HESCO barrier? Is there a lifespan?
Well, there is. They end up getting sitting in the river water. They're holding that sand. They're sitting there for some of them. This last batch, we had to get rid of all of them because they had fecal material on them. But they had already, regardless, they'd already set, a lot of those had sat for a year and gone through three or four floods, our high water events on them during that time. And, you know, they don't have a long lifespan when you're going through that. Some of them make it only through one. Some of them make it through three or four usages. As they start to get battered and torn, we'll send them in for repairs, the ones that can, and get those reused. They don't last a significant length of time when you're having events like this. I think we've had, in the 8 years I've been here, I think that we've had three, maybe four major purchases of HESCOs.
How expensive are they?
I'm not even sure how much they are per. We spent $70,000 on this last order. We bought 15 pallets of them from Two Rivers for $15,000. I think that replacing them with new, they're different sizes, but if we were buying new, we were looking in the $40,000 range for those, for 15 pallets, and I think there's 10 of them, and I think those are four. Six long?
If you were to take all the HESCO barriers you have and spread them all out, how big of an area, how long are they? I mean, how long of a stretch of protection do you have?
Can we? I don't even know the length of the footage. If you think about what we do, like even on the north end, that's, 150 feet?
Yeah.
And you're doing, this last time, I think we had those three wide, two high. You're adding up a significant length very quickly without covering a large area. And then on the southern end, they were too wide and then too high much longer distance.
I'm remarking because I know that it was, I believe, a couple of years ago in Cedar Rapids when they were facing flooding, which seems like all the time that everybody's facing flooding if you're near a river, but they had 3.5 miles of HESCO barriers.
Yeah, we don't have like that, but I don't know if we would be in the half mile range total.
Okay.
That would be one to go and look at a schematic, and it changes from one deployment to another. This last one, we just started putting them along the north end. This last year, running from the newly constructed flood wall over to tie into the on-ramp is a straight shot over. On the southern end, we do essentially a straight shot from the flood wall around the lift station and straight west, and when it's fully deployed, it's going across Main Street. So you got a significant length run there. Well, we also had to run around the hole at the railroad crossing, and that was a too wide, and I think we might have gone too high for some of the deployment, one high for another deployment around that hole. We had another hole in the, or we had a, not a hole, one of our pits we had to ring as well, just south of the auditorium, and so you're doing a significant amount of placement there. We had a line break on one of our sewer lines and had backflow that went. It meant that we ended up having to HESCO around the grates on the north side of the auditorium, and so we're, as you trace, as we end up tracing back other issues that come up, you end up deploying way more resources on a on sort of a one-off basis, depending on what's going on with this given flood event and what's going on.
Which is obviously a lot of city employees are going to be working on that. How many city employees work on putting up a HESCO barrier?
It depends on the deployment. We'll get probably in the 30 range that we'll end up. But, I mean, and again, it really depends on the deployment. And I'm not sure how many we have down there this time. I don't know that we have a belt placer down there this morning or not. I imagine that they do. But you can, if they want to, they can do that with about 10 employees down
okay.
there. When they need to do multiple pieces, it's more of an all hands on deck, and you're going to be 30 plus.
But it's a lot of sand. It's a lot of sand too that you have, right?
Yes. So yeah, we'll truck that in. I don't like this event. I don't think that they're worried at all about bringing in sandbags or getting those prepared. It's more just the HESCO barriers to do the initial pieces for a couple of low spots.
What is the? You said the threshold. What is 17 feet? Is that right?
Right in that neighborhood. I think 16 and a half is where they start looking at it. Is at 17, you start having some initial spots where you now can't get back in to place HESCOs in those low spots
okay.
without being in the river.
So you better do it before it gets
yeah.
to those spots, is what you're telling me. You know, obviously we've had a lot of floods that have occurred. We've had the auditorium has been an issue, and I know we talked about the last time. We talked about The fact is you've got this next segment of the flood mitigation project. When does that start construction, and how long will that take?
So that's scheduled to go out to bid this next late winter, early spring, and hopefully be able to get started in this next construction season. But, you know, that's going to be – it would be nice to have – it should be able to be done within one full year. But a lot of that is weather dependent and river level dependent. When we did the first segment of the wall, we had a low river level throughout the whole project, and that was just tremendous. And we were able to get that done in, I want to say, about 11 months, most of the work, from one steamboat days to the next. This one is maybe a tad shorter total length between the north and the south end, and should be able to be done in a quicker manner. I think the two pieces that will potentially, from a timing perspective, have some issues is going to be the we're looking to do flood closures at both of the rail crossings. We're going to be crossing the short line railroad on both the north end and the south end.
So as you basically steer the water or steer the river water away, it opens up areas. Other areas are also subject to flooding. Is that correct? Farther up the river or down the river?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Any time a flood wall is looked at, they try to take a look at what the impact is
okay.
on other areas. Ours didn't have any significant impact on other locations, I think largely because of the minimal amount of displaced area.
I think I was thinking of the railroad depot, because you're not the next section of flood mitigation will not be
no.
But will that have So that would still be protected by HESCO barriers, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, one of the issues that we have with the depot, and this last time when the water was up, we had water pump coming into the basement there. It's
right.
A dirt floor basement, coming in faster than we could pump it out. And that's going to, for any solution for what we do with the depot, being able to pump water out and control that water underneath the depot itself is going to be, it's an issue that we haven't had as part of our plans, and we're going to have a solution at some point.
Is the solution a bigger pumping system?
Yeah, it will be.
Okay. All right. We're talking with Jim Furno. We talked a little bit about the proposed plans, and I know you've had meetings and you've had hearings on the Tiger Grant plans and a lot of the riverfront improvements that have been going on there. We also talked about a projected or possible hotel that would be located between the port building and the auditorium.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and also the fact, if I'm right, would the developer of the hotel also be the person or whatever in charge of running the Memorial Auditorium? Is that correct?
Yes, that would be correct. And I mean, what they're looking at is how do we make the auditorium a space that can be attractive to events? They're looking at potential alterations to it, and I think they're looking at as you look at that structure, making alterations to it is not going to be
not an easy thing,
and it's going to be expensive. And so they're trying to look at now: can we do this in a cost-effective manner in a way that we can make this cash flow over time? How much is this going to cost? What are the possible options for running it? Because the developer himself is not someone who has run this. I know they've had contacts and have discussed with the local operators how they're doing and what their future plans are, and is there something that they could work and coordinate for how that happened in the future too. You know, and with the auditorium itself, and one of the things going to come up in discussions probably over the next, well, I don't know what the time frame will be, but, you know, the school has, with the one cent penny extension, now they're looking at the next round of projects that they'll be doing within their facilities. And one of them they have online on tap is the school auditorium. And as they get into building a new auditorium, they're going to have to discuss where do we want to see that. There was some level of discussion a couple of years ago about the future of our auditorium and what would happen with it long term. And one of the ideas that had come up then was, should we be looking at a partnership with the school system in a way to have the events that are currently at the auditorium, could they be in a potential new school auditorium? Those are going to be part of discussions as we move forward.
So there's a lot of ifs.
You've got a lot of ifs going on with what may happen long term. And that's, as we talk about that, that's long term. We have a requirement that we have to have an auditorium down along the waterfront until 2026, just from a state funding perspective, from the last grant funds that we got back in 2005 for a remodel or expansion of that.
Now, I know there's some the lower level of the auditorium, the flooring area particularly. That's going to be under repair for some time. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. There are multiple rooms throughout the main level, not the parquet floor, but I mean the lower level conference area and the kitchen and stuff. You've got walls out up to about five foot high. All the flooring is out. It's going to need new floors put in, the drywall put back in, everything repainted. I think that they may be redoing some of the lights in the main conference room down there too. It's the time to do it because everything's torn out. They've changed a few of the breakers in that room, and some of the lights. I know that there's some chandeliers that are in there. One of them, they had a break of the glass occur at some point in the past. Well, they don't make them anymore.
Yeah.
Those are decades old, and so this is a spot where those are likely going to be replaced with a new fixture that that they can have consistently through that room that they're able to maintain over time.
The heating system, heating and cooling system there also is damaged too, is that right?
So we had a lot of controls that were out on the HVAC unit. We took out a lot of those and had those replaced, made it a simpler system to run, and we were getting close to a position we had to have that happen fairly soon anyway. The controls on that never did, I think, from my understanding, what they were supposed to, but regardless, they were getting to a point where replacement parts was hard to come by on those. You know, if we look, I haven't been into the auditorium in over a week. The last time I was in there, the area where the elevator shaft is on the northwest corner, the walls have been redone in there, and they look pretty nice. The tiling still needs to be done in that area, and what are we doing there? And there are just a lot of pieces that are going on.
We were talking about the boiler system.
The boiler is in process. That was a significant cost item, and we're hoping to have that done by the end of the month. But you know, that was a 6-month fabrication process, and or 6-week fabrication process, and hopefully it's in place here. As we start to hit some cooler weather, that becomes an issue for events that are occurring towards the end of the month.
So when would the hearing, or when would the discussion? I know that we mentioned the hotel, we mentioned the change of ownership, all of the things that are being talked about. All of that would go through public hearings, would it not?
Oh yeah, that's going to be an agreement that will be if they say that they're interested in pursuing something, they're going to have at by that time they'll have had to have had some initial cost estimates put together. They've made no bones about saying that they're going to need some TIF financing to be a portion of that. And the council will have to take a look at, well, what out of this development, what's going to be any new value that's created? Does it cash flow that? What's the operation of the auditorium now? What does it cost us to do that? And how is the arrangement going to look for costs moving forward determination on that?
When would you anticipate hearings to begin on something like that? Sometime after the first of the year?
I'd say probably after the first of the year. And you're going to have a brand new council.
That's true. We'll have two new council members. We'll talk a little bit about that. And the Tiger Grant program in general. We're going to take a break for news. Jim Furno is our guest. And if you've got a question for Jim about city business, you can feel free to call us at 754-1490. And we shall return right after this.
The will to win is not nearly as important as the will to prepare to win. We live for preparation, and we prepare to be the best that we can be for this game.
Pick six to start the game. Touchdown. Touchdown, Iowa.
The Hawks travel to Michigan with pregame Saturday morning at 9 a.m. Brought to you by Bob Dodd's Insurance, Reinsmith's Flooring America, the Danville State Savings Bank, and by Standard of Beaverdale on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
It's back on stage this week for four more delightful performances at Burlington's Players Workshop. It's Neil Simon's classic comedy, The Prisoner of Second Avenue. The Prisoner of Second Avenue is the story of Mel Edison, a middle-aged executive who loses his job and is forced to endure being trapped at home. It's full of dark humor, laughter, and it's back on stage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 2. And buy your season tickets now for the whole season, including the best Christmas pageant ever. Comedy in December, the historical docudrama The Radiant in February, and the comedy farce of Fox on the Fairway in April and May. Season tickets just $45 and students $30. Single show tickets just $15. And you can buy online at playersworkshoptheater.com. The Prisoner of Second Avenue, a classic Neil Simon comedy, back this Thursday through Sunday for its final weekend, continuing another great season of live theater at the Players Workshop in Burlington.
Right now at VisionWorks.com. When you buy one complete pair of glasses, you get a second free. That means you could get a pair of glasses and a free pair of prescription sunglasses. So you don't have to do the thing where you wear your glasses under your sunglasses when you drive. Or you can get a pair of glasses and a free second pair with different frames. Or a free backup pair. Or maybe another scenario we didn't think of. No matter what, when you buy one pair of glasses, you get one free at VisionWorks.com. VisionWorks. See the difference. Restrictions apply. See website for details.
I think my daddy has superpowers. Because he can turn all my red shirts pink. But he hasn't learned how to make them red again.
There's nothing super about clothes fading. Use Downy Fabric Conditioner to help lock in color wash after wash. Because laundry isn't done until it's done with Downy.
Daddy is still my hero. But I think he needs Downy as a sidekick.
The best part about changing seasons is end-of-season savings at Farm King. Save $40 off the Husqvarna self-propelled high-wheel variable speed mower and $30 off the all-wheel drive self-propelled mower. Take $20 off a Black & Decker hedge trimmer and take $10 off the Black & Decker blower vac. Perfect for fall from Farm King. And speaking of cleanup, save $10 off the ShopVac Easy Series wet-dry vacuum and get a fresh clean look for your home with $15 off a Stanley pressure washer now at Farm King.
News now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
And now a look at today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty. With several days of heavy rainfall, the Mississippi River has once again begun to rise, and the city of Burlington has begun to prepare for potential flooding. City workers plan to put up HESCO barriers around the north end of the flood wall in preparation of a flood. Public Works decided Monday that once the river reaches 16 and a half feet, they will be putting up some HESCO walls. At 17 feet, they anticipate minimal flooding. However, they believe it's unlikely the river will get any higher, provided heavy rainfall does not persist. A deadly drug cocktail killed two people this past July, Burlington Police Department announced Tuesday. The Hawkeye reports the bodies of 59-year-old Kevin John Shavers of Burlington and 33-year-old Marlo Michelle Pilkington of Fort Madison were discovered July 17th in Shavers' apartment at 617 Maple Street after a neighbor reported Shaver had not been seen for some time. According to the BPD, final autopsy and toxicology reports indicate Shavers died after ingesting fentanyl, methamphetamine, and cocaine. Pilkington died of methamphetamine and fentanyl intoxication. On Tuesday at approximately 12:15 p.m., Fort Madison police were dispatched to a rollover accident near Fort Madison Hospital. Upon arrival, it was determined the crash had occurred at the intersection of Avenue O and 53rd Street. Traffic lights at this intersection are non-functional and had been replaced by stop signs and warning flags. Two vehicles were found at the scene along with a truck on its side just west of the scene. One of the drivers, 58-year-old Sandra Seeger of Donelson, Iowa, was extricated from her car by the fire department and was transported to Fort Madison Community Hospital, while the other driver, 37-year-old Sabrina Brown of Niota, Illinois, had only minor injuries and would later seek medical treatment. The truck driver, 50-year-old Christopher Amberger of West Point, Iowa, was able to exit his vehicle on his own and refused medical treatment. Amberger was transported to Fort Madison Police Department, where he initially was charged with a traffic offense of, quote, following too closely. The current medical condition of Seeger is unknown. And those were today's headlines in the KBUR newsroom. I'm Colin Letty.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo confirms he was on the line listening when President Trump asked Ukraine's president to investigate Joe Biden. He says it was about ending corruption and that House Democrats are improperly pressuring State Department employees to testify.
They said that the State Department wouldn't be able to be present. There are important constitutional prerogatives that the executive branch has to be present.
Democratic Party committee chairs accused Secretary Pompeo of trying to intimidate department witnesses. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson is trying again to renegotiate a breakup with the European Union that he says will happen with or without a deal by the end of the month.
We will, under no circumstances, have checks at or near the border in Northern Ireland.
It's a sticking point because Ireland will still be part of the European Union, while Northern Ireland, part of the United Kingdom, will not. America's listening to Fox News.
Weather now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Continue cloudy skies. We are looking at showers and thunderstorms. 60% likely to develop, mainly after 4 p.m. today. Temperatures steady or slowly falling. Cloudy showers and thunderstorms 80% likely tonight. Low down to 57. We'll see cloudy skies early Thursday, then becoming mostly sunny, high of 61. And partly cloudy Thursday night, 46. Mostly sunny Friday with a high to 62. Still overcast skies. We're at 71 degrees.
I'm Jessica Ettinger, CNBC. Stocks continue their October slide this morning on Wall Street on recession fears. The Dow is down 1%, down 281 points. The NASDAQ down more than 1%, down 90 points. The S&P down more than 1%, down 31 points. 135,000 private sector jobs were created in September, a little less than expected, according to ADP. August was revised downward. A Bleakley advisory note says there's been zero net change in hiring over the past 5 months as businesses slow their pace of hiring in a cloudy economic environment. Ford says overall sales dropped in its third quarter, but pickup truck sales were higher. The standout number from Ford, though, is the average transaction price, $37,900, up more than $2,000 for a vehicle over the same quarter last year, and buyers are paying. CNBC.
Hey, have you heard that ransomware attacks have increased by 500% this year?
Yeah, cybercriminals are targeting all types of businesses, encrypting their data and holding it hostage unless they pay up.
What if we're their next victim?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda to detect, prevent, and recover from ransomware and other advanced threats.
So we're secured?
Absolutely. We'll pay no ransom and keep this business up and running.
That's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda. Your journey secured.
If you have hard water, the limescale not only leaves white spots, it clogs pipes and breaks down appliances, costing you hundreds of dollars in energy and wear. Eliminate limescale and other water issues like brown staining, bad odors, and lead with HydroCare water products available from Wave Home Solutions. Wave's affordable systems don't use salts or chemicals. You'll love the way your water tastes, smells, and looks. Satisfaction guaranteed. For more information, go to WaveBestWater.com. That's WaveBestWater.com.
Think of them as living in the hearts of those they've touched. For nothing loved is ever lost, and they were loved so much. Have you pre-planned your end-of-life arrangements, cemetery location, and cemetery memorial? Leda Burris and Metz Monuments on Oak and Osborne Streets in Burlington invite you to stop into their office to discuss the opportunity to do so today. Cemetery lots and granite memorials available to you now through their fall sale of up to 50% off in-stock granite memorials. Now through Saturday, October 12th. If you can dream it, they can do it. Leda Burris and Metz Monuments on Oak and Osborne Streets in Burlington for all your memorial needs. Serving the tri-state area and beyond for over 127 years now. Still time for fall installation. Quality you can see from a company you can trust. Leda Burris and Metz Monument on Oak and Osborne Streets in Burlington, Iowa.
Save big money on your fall home improvement projects now during Menards Oktoberfest sale. Coordinate the look of your home with complimenting finishes and styles from Schlage Lock Sets. Menards has a wide variety of styles from interior doorknobs to exterior lock sets. Right now, the Sacramento Hall and Closet Passage Lever in a satin nickel finish is just $19.99. Save on all of your projects during Menards Oktoberfest sale, going on now through October 12th.
Save big money at Menards.
Start your day with KBUR.
The morning news.
The weather.
Information you need to start your day.
Instant, up to date.
News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. And online at KBUR.com.
And good morning. It is a city manager day on the talk shows. Jim Furneaux is joining us. Colin Letty is across the console. He's listening intently. Colin is going to be, as I said, over the year, the next period of time, he'll be building up. We are talking about election forums. There's going to be three candidates that will be running for two seats. And so you've got you're guaranteed two new city council members. Is that right, Jim?
Yeah, Annie and Shane. Neither of them have chosen to run for re-election. So we do have three candidates who are running for those two seats. The first forum that'll be held, the candidate forum, is being done by the partnership. It looks like it was scheduled in City Hall on Tuesday, October 22nd. So, 3 weeks out? Just shy of that. That evening will be the first spot that I know of for being able to really hear how the three candidates compare between each other. So encourage folks to make sure that they tune in and listen or watch that that forum. I'm not sure if there'll be another forum or not. There's another group that typically does a candidate forum here in the fall. It hasn't been scheduled yet for City Hall.
I don't know if a smaller number of candidates makes a difference or not. There's no primary. You've had a primary. In fact, I can't remember the last time you didn't have a primary. I'm betting
most times I think that we've had a primary while I've been here. I think that we might have had 9 people who ran for 3 slots.
Yeah.
I think last time. So this is a significantly lower number. Still though, people need to know what's the difference between them so they can make good and wise decisions about who's going to best represent them in community leadership.
Now you've had a good working relationship with the council over all the years, haven't you?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I think that I think that you could probably find some that would say that they may not have gotten along with me as well as others, but had decent relationships over the years with the council.
As you look at now we were talking about the Tiger Grants, and what is it, artist conception drawings of what sort of things are going to look like? Is that right, Colin?
Definitely seen a lot of the concept art that has come out with the Tiger Grant with all the stuff going downtown, like on Main and Jefferson. And a lot of the mock-ups I've seen are really, really visually appealing. But definitely there's been a lot of questions raised about the logistics of everything going on with it.
And that's a question I would have, too.
The sequencing of the work. So we have to... We have to bid everything out by next October, and that will be for the whole shebang. It'll include Jefferson Street, Main Street, and all of the work along the riverfront. They're looking to break it down, though. There's two different pieces. The street work, Jefferson Street and Main Street, will be significantly different from what goes along the riverfront. So they're looking to have those broken into separate contracts. They're also looking to phase work, do the Jefferson Street corridor 1 year, do the Main Street corridor the second year, and then even on the riverfront, phase that between 2 years as well.
Half
1 year and the south half the other year.
Are you looking at the similar type of parking situation? Or are you looking at changing the parking situation?
So what they're looking to do is parallel parking on Jefferson Street, parallel parking on the north side of the street, and angle parking on the south side. And if you go down through the Jefferson Street corridor, the majority of the corridor is that way now. But there are a few blocks that are different. You have some that you have parallel on both sides, notably down by the Two Rivers and the post office. And you have then some other parts where you have angular on each side. And we talked about how do you balance, as the groups talked about, how do you balance out carrying a visual feel where it's the same all the way through the corridor versus having some of those differences. There are pros and cons both ways. And the group that was involved in doing that, I mean, you had some voices that were very much adamant one direction, others that were very adamant the other way, and the larger opinion came out. We want to see some consistency through it, and we heard voices along the western end of Jefferson saying we don't want to be treated differently than what east of that 6th Street area is.
Now, I know that we talk about the Complete Streets program, which is to encouraging basically non-motorized transportation, bicycles, etc. But there really is not an opportunity. I'm going to guess I don't think that was feasible along the Jefferson Street corridor, is it?
Jefferson Street, they're just doing a Cheryl.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Bikes ride in the lane of traffic. And I don't know how you do anything different than that. The Main Street, they are looking to have they want to try to get connected in with the sidewalk that's along the riverfront now. That's designed to be a bike trail.
Okay.
And to connect into the bike trail headed north, out of town and eventually out to it heads by Stars Cave.
It actually heads out. It goes out to Stars Cave, and then there,
and then eventually
off to Big Hollow.
Yep, and they want to have all those connections be made, and then as it goes through the riverfront area, then to connect through what we're doing here on South Main Street would head towards Crapo and Daycourt Park. So we'll do the portion that's associated with this project for the area that we're doing. That, you know, we're only going down to, is that Angular Street that we head down to?
I have the map up here on the screen right now, and we've got layouts from
it goes down to Angular.
Jefferson Angular.
Out to Angular, okay.
So as you go along in front of the depot there, the plan is to have a trail on the east side of Main Street. And that portion south of BNSF's crossing of Main Street, changing the lanes of traffic, it'll change into a two lanes,
okay,
on the southern end. The northern end on the north side of BNSF would be three lanes, two lanes
similar
of traffic
to what's
with,
been
a,
on,
with a turn lane.
Similar to what's been done on Mount Pleasant Street, is that,
yes,
right?
Okay. For the north end, but the south end will go to more of the two lanes with a parking on just one side, and that's after you get it transition at Division Street, I think, is where it kind of transitions with that, losing that turn lane. And there's some extra room to be able to have the separated bike lanes on that south end.
Okay.
You're looking at a lot of this stuff online, so for folks who want to take a look and look at what is out there for proposed design standards, that's on the City of Burlington's website. burlingtoniowa.org, and then where on our page did you get
I actually
to that
found
out?
This on the City of Burlington's Facebook page.
Okay.
So they can also, there's also a link off there too.
But okay. it's on our website, and actually you've come over, even though you got the link off of our Facebook, you're on our website now. But we have a section that's devoted to the Tiger Grant project with a lot of the background materials that we had to use to justify why we were going to spend this money. I mean, we can't spend it any way we want. We have to do it within the framework of what we said that we were going to do, and we had to have that based off of a plan that had been written.
So what is
earlier.
Next? What's next in the process? Making a decision? Is that what's next?
You know, the biggest hurdle that's sitting out there right now is that what's going to happen with that hotel. We need in terms of doing design work for the Tiger, for them to hit the time frames they have, the engineers have to hit to get environmental clearances done and have things ultimately approved by State Department of Transportation and then federal U.S. Highway Administration. We need to have an answer what they're doing moving forward on design by December. They've left out, they kind of presented, they're blocking out those two pieces, both north, immediately north and immediately south of the auditorium that would be impacted. Immediately north would be where a hotel would sit. Immediately south would be potentially seeing some level of a parking deck to try to make up for lost parking between the auditorium and the port.
Okay, so December would be the target to get a decision made, and any construction or the beginning of any construction, we're looking at how far?
It'll be at least out to the spring of 2021.
Okay.
I'm seeing here we've got a planning and design process plan here up on the site with all the Tiger Grant stuff I'm looking at here, and says final design submittal to Iowa DOT. Their plan submission will be summer of next year.
Okay.
Yep.
And then starting construction would be fall of next year.
Okay. Now that's our bid letting.
For the bid letting.
You see the Iowa DOT
construction in 2021. Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. Lots of things to talk about. We're going to take another break. We'll be back with more of Jim Furno right after this.
Friday night is football night on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. This Friday, join Scott Mason and John Flaherty as Burlington travels to Bettendorf. Brought to you by Reinschmidt's Flooring America, Bob Dodd's Insurance, Kirkmaster Family Dentistry, the Danville State Savings Bank, Barn Grover Glass, Courtesy Door, Case Fine Community Credit Union, and Standard of Beaverdale. VHS football, 7 p.m. Friday night on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR and KBUR.com.
It's back on stage this week for four more delightful performances at Burlington's Players Workshop. It's Neil Simon's classic comedy, The Prisoner of Second Avenue. The Prisoner of Second Avenue is the story of Mel Edison, a middle-aged executive who loses his job and is forced to endure being trapped at home. It's full of dark humor, laughter, and it's back on stage Thursday, Friday, and Saturday nights at 7:30 and Sunday afternoon at 2. And buy your season tickets now for the whole season, including the best Christmas pageant ever. Comedy in December, the historical docudrama The Radiant in February, and the comedy farce of Fox on the Fairway in April and May. Season tickets just $45 and students $30. Single show tickets just $15. And you can buy online at playersworkshoptheater.com. The Prisoner of Second Avenue, a classic Neil Simon comedy, back this Thursday through Sunday for its final weekend, continuing another great season of live theater at the Players Workshop in Burlington. Whether you need a new one or aren't satisfied with your current subcompact tractor, see Scott Equipment for the complete line of LS tractors. The LS MT 1 Series subcompact with a loader is just barely over $13,000, including a 6-year powertrain warranty. Add a belly mower and even a 6-foot backhoe with power to spare. Why not use in-house financing and payments as low as $173 a month for a new tractor loader? Ready? See Scott Equipment in Biggsville and Galesburg today.
Save big money on your fall home and improvement projects now during Menards Oktoberfest sale. Get more storage space with Dakota shelving. Bullnose shelving has one finished rounded edge and is perfect for laundry rooms, pantries, and closets. 11 1/4 inch deep by 4 foot long bullnose shelves in white or oak are only $199 each after sale price and rebate. Save on all of your projects during Menards Oktoberfest sale, going on now through October 12th.
Save big money at Menards.
And welcome back on the talk show today. Jim Furno is the city manager. Colin Letty's across the console. We've been looking at the Tiger Grant. Again, that's on the website, City of Burlington website. You can take a look at all the projected or design work that's been submitted. And again, decisions will be made sometime probably by December on this, but no construction or no letting would be happening until really a fall, a year from now. Is that about right, Jim?
Go out for bid lets next fall, and construction
in 2021.
I can't believe I can't say spring of 2021.
It's almost as we're sitting here in October looking at moving into a and winter. I guess winter is impossible to know what's going to be happening. We had last year you had a very different winter than you've had the previous, I think, two or three winters, isn't that right?
It was one of our heavier snow events, colder than what has been here
timing,
for several
the
years.
The timing was also problematic because it tended to happen, all of the snow events tended to happen on weekends.
Yeah, for snow removal, it wasn't great. For kids who wanted to miss school, it was fantastic. For those that didn't want to go to school into June, it was horrible.
Not only that, but all the snow events, like, all of them were on weekends, and most of them happened, like, back-to-back with each other.
Yeah.
So it kind of all came at once.
And if you had cold, it was bitter cold. We're trying not to even look at the old Farmer's Almanac, pretending that it, you know, I don't know if the old Farmer's Almanac has any, how likely that is to be correct or not correct. Or if it's more just for amusement. It almost seems like it's more for amusement than it is anything else. I don't know. But regardless, as far as the snow removal budget and any changes in You're not looking at doing any changes in snow removal, are you? I mean, in
no,
terms
actually,
of
I think this
parking
last...
areas and things like that. No. I know that was something that was under consideration.
No, there have been some discussions about making changes in the downtown area was one that had come up.
Right.
But you get into those discussions. We had council members who started to talk about, well, what about doing something citywide? And those, as those discussions went on, it got more and more confusing. It's just... It's difficult to make a change.
It is.
We've seen that in multiple areas. Switching garbage cans here a year and a half ago was a difficult thing.
It's turned out to be a pretty smooth transition, though, hasn't it?
The cans themselves for the program, it was a very smooth transition. Don would not tell you that. He had major issues going through getting them ordered and getting them placed and then doing change-outs, but really it was fairly smooth. Now, I know individual customers, there's a lot. There are several that weren't really enthused with the change.
Is it doing the job in terms of helping to prevent injuries? And because I know that...
Well, that's just sort of a long-term thing, and it's a hard one. That'll be a hard one to quantify.
You can't project that in a year.
Right? No, but the one thing that you can look at, you can drive through the alleys, and they're a little cleaner.
Okay.
And that's kind of was part of the hope was to be able to have a container that was consistent, that helped to provide a better look that people saw. We wanted to be able to have that occurring at the same time that we were looking at how do we do something that will address some of the injury issues that we've had over time. And when you look at injuries, those are things that build up over years.
Right.
for employees and
the
dealing with stuff.
We're talking workman's compensation is what
correct.
We're really talking
correct.
About.
Correct, as you get back injuries and knee injuries. So it is for employees, what they saw this last winter, and it was a horrible winter for them to put in new containers, and then you're immediately having them on snow banks that are larger than what is the typical thing to have happen. But they learned that they... We're now using muscles in a different way than what they had previously, so they may have fewer issues with heaving the containers, but they have different issues that they have to deal with in strengthening muscles and for the how you have to coordinate the movement of the containers now. And the other piece is the way they dump into the back of the trucks. You know, you have an arm that flips them, though you have to go at the speed that arm does it at. And a lot of the containers before, they could flip a little bit faster, and now you're going to more of a consistent speed that you're waiting for it to do the flip and then the compaction. And it takes, they just have to get used to different times on things. And
right.
I think that they've gotten to where they've adjusted to it, but it's a much different way of doing operations.
But overall, it's been a fairly successful transition.
I think so.
Is that right?
The transition has gone well.
And as far as delisting the Cascade Bridge, is that a process yet to be determined, or is it yet to be?
Wow, you're ready to get off the air.
No,
you're going into
I
the
didn't.
Bumper music.
No,
leave.
I simply hit the switch. That's all I did.
All right. So, well, we're working with Impact 7G over the next. I think they're looking to have a couple of public meetings over the course of the next. A few months and try to work through doing a good comprehensive overview of what has been done over the last few years with the bridge, what the level of work that's been done to try to maintain it over several decades, and what are the pros and cons and the difficulties of each of the different routes moving forward.
But it's still...
It's moving forward.
It's still the delisting has to happen in somewhere in 2024 or the fiscal year 24. Is that right?
You're asking for if a reconstruction project is what's going to happen. or rehab of the existing facility or reconstruction.
At least it was tentatively listed as that.
That's tentatively where we looked at where we could have the funding to make it happen. And, you know, part of it, you have a council change here in 2020. We'll have another election cycle for folks changing potentially in 2022. each of those is a spot where you have changes of attitudes about what the future looks like for not just that project, but ultimately a lot of other things that happen.
Anything you can count on is that things are going to be changing over the next few months and years. But
yes.
Jim Furno, again, let's see, we've got a... Is it a council meeting that's coming
we
up?
We have a council meeting next Monday, and you can move that bumper music up as we head out.
We are heading out. Jim Furno, thank you so much.